Good afternoon. My name is Adun Okupe and I'm a senior advisor at Red Clay. And we got to speak to Wale Irokosu, who is the managing partner at Probitas Partner. Wale, hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Adun. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, what we're here for is really to talk about Nigeria and the hospitality and tourism industry, right? And to kind of give a perspective on the legal framework and for you to shed some light. The reason for this is because investors, government, policymakers, and the general practitioners within the industry, there are certain things that can be quite confusing when it comes to what are the laws that govern tourism businesses in Nigeria, and also what are the policies that address or regulate their activities. So could you just share from your experience, and I know you've been in the legal practice for very many years, could you share from your experience just a quick rundown of the current state of the legal and regulatory environment for tourism in Nigeria?
I think, thank you very much, Adam. I think the first thing to note is that both the federal government and the state government are currently exercising some level of regulatory powers over the industry, and they both have laws. At least I'm very familiar with Lagos State. So you have the Companies and Allied Matters Act, which has to do with the structure, the company. And you have the National Office of Technology Acquisition and Promotion Act, that has to do with when you are bringing in technology into the country, and quite a number of technology that they use in hotels and everything were developed abroad. So there's a law that guides that, particularly relating to ensuring that there's technology transfer. Then there is a National Investment and Promotion Commission Act. Of course, a lot of the big hospitality brands are foreign, Marriott, Hilton, or what have you. So if you are bringing in money so that you are able to repatriate your capital, you have to get some certificate from them that would allow you to import and also get money. Then you then have the National Tourism and Development Corporation, which is a federal government agency. Then if you are operating in Lagos State, there is the Ministry of Tourism. You have the Hotels and Tourism whatever law, which some of us will argue that is double taxation as far as VAT is concerned, because you pay some hotel tax, then you pay VAT. And VAT, simplistically, is just consumption tax. It's that you pay for consuming something. According to the law, at least according to the constitution, VAT belongs to the state government. And federal government just act as a collection agent. So when you are collecting VAT from me on behalf of the state, and the state is also is coming to collect money for hotel, so I'm paying 7.5 for VAT, and I'm paying 5% at different outlets. So invariably I'm paying 12.5. There's an authority or that says it's double taxation. But in Nigeria, because of how long the legal process usually takes, people are not really encouraged to go to court, because time is the essence of business. You need to do business today. So even if you are challenging it, you end up paying it. So you are not only talking about double taxation, you're also talking about the bureaucratic bottlenecks. And when you have to deal with 3 or 4 or 5 agencies, it would be better if there's a one-stop shop that handles everybody. If I have to go to Lagos State Ministry, then after that I go to Abuja to one federal government agency, then I go to, it's just too much. Just too much. So it doesn't really, it doesn't make the industry efficient. It also reduces the money available to consumers to spend, because no businessman bears the cost ultimately. They pass it on to the consumers. So if I'm meant to pay 10,000 naira and I'm paying 20,000, I'll just double what I'm charging my customers, you know, which leaves the customers with limited resources to also spend.
Absolutely.
Yes, I was also going to say that there's also the issue of the personnel driving the industry. Because ultimately government needs revenue to run the state. Absolutely. Now you need to determine what you are making your money for. Do you want to make your money like a toll gate operator, which is how we typically act? You cannot cross if you don't pay. Now, according to the Company Income Tax Act, you know, every 30% of what I make as a company goes to federal government as company income tax. Then I also pay 2% in education tax. So invariably, federal government is a patronage of my organization. So the more money I make, the more money federal government makes conceptually.
Yeah.
So federal government should be more incentivized to encourage me to do more business, because I'll take people off the street with employment, then I'll make money that I can pay federal government. But in a situation where federal government collects so much money from me to the point that I'm not making profit, in the long run, my argument is that federal government is shortchanging itself. I mean, I remember, I think, some months ago or about a year ago, I think the Federal Inland Revenue Service, they went to raid one hotel in Abuja or customs, and they were seizing cars. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, if the hotel doesn't make money, they don't pay tax, then they won't be able to pay their staff. People will be unemployed. Now, people won't want to go to that hotel because they'll be scared that their cars will be seized. Must you go into hotels to go and be seizing cars? You are thinking short term. If someone buys a car of 5 million or 10 million, you probably pay 5% or 10% or less than that in custom duties. But you probably make more than that from the hotel, where people feel comfortable to come in, you know. So there's anti-business approach to tax enforcement, because must you come and seal off the place? Can't you drop a letter? Can't you invite? Can't you negotiate? So I think government can do more to encourage businesses, reducing the agencies that they have to deal with, reducing multiplicity of taxation, and also being careful how they enforce some of the laws, so that ultimately the economy is not worse off for it. Thank you.
No, I can see the passion in your delivery, and I have to say that that's something that we see in our work when we're in advising investors, is that sense of the multiple taxation, but also the fact that, you know, there are so many different agencies, councils, the level of bureaucracy, and like you mentioned, the hotel occupancy and restaurant consumption law that imposes tax, and then you have a VAT, and it just means that we need to really see how we can harmonize and see how we can streamline. And I would say that part of the challenge as well is that, you know, in Lagos State it's A, and then you go to another state, it's B. And so if for example, you want to see how you can run different investments across Nigeria, you have to get to grips with so many different policies and laws. And I agree with you that it's affecting our competitiveness as a destination, which is our key focus here, and is to say that how can we also make sure that our regulatory environment is geared towards competitiveness. So you did mention something, which is harmonization and streamlining. You also mentioned that it's about ensuring that we look at the type of people that are doing the enforcement, and even I would say the attitude, right? Even if you want to impose a penalty, you don't have to go and impound them. You don't have to go and close off or seal off. That shouldn't be the course of action. There should be other ways of doing this. So I guess the question now is to get your own perspective of how can we gear the industry and the legal environment towards competitiveness?
I think the first thing, like I mentioned earlier on, you need a one-stop shop for harmonization. The left hand and the right hand must know what the other is doing. So if there's a one-stop shop that I go to, as a hotel promoter, for example, then I don't have to be dealing with multiple people. So that reduces the time that I have to spend going to different agencies. Also, there needs to be harmonization of the tax law. And government needs to be clear about what their ultimate goal is. If your ultimate goal is to generate revenue, is to create employment, you then need to decide whether you rather make $1 million today and not create employment, or you want to make 100 million in 5-10 years time, which covers, you know, for the old years that you are not making money. So there are countries that they have investment promoters, for lack of a better word, or agent, that go, they'll come to Nigeria, for example, and say, look, come, I'll give you land. I'll give you tax break for 5 years. I'll give you this and that. If you have a problem with any agency, I'll sort you out. We need to have people that are supporting businesses like that, that are working from the side of government. And I think that's what NIPC was really designed for. How good they are in doing that, I don't know. So to answer your question again, I think the time for getting these licenses must be reduced. The number must be reduced. The people you are dealing with must be reduced. And there must be someone that is really championing the cause of these things. And they must have a direct line to the powers that be. If it's in the state, the person must be someone that has access to the governor, so that the governor can call anybody to order. And if it's at the federal government level, I think something like that should apply. So one-stop shop, harmonization of tax laws, reduction of multiple taxation, and also I think security, even though it has nothing to do with law, you know, is also important. You know, in a situation where the American government, the British government, the EU are issuing a travel advisory, you know, I mean, it doesn't help as well. And I think we have to find a way not to ignore that and keep putting it, even though it's not part of law, you know, but it's part of the things that would drive the industry.
I completely agree with you. And I would say that it's important that we're able to also learn from other destinations and see what other destinations are doing, how they're doing very well, and areas we can learn from, because really it's about how attractive a destination can be. And I guess that, yes, this one-stop shop would be good. We're not asking that another shop be created. It's really just about ensuring that those that exist, right, are doing what they're doing, what they've been set up to do, and are able to do it efficiently and effectively. And then we also, I think, need to look at how we can incentivize investors. So now, one thing that we also know is that not every investor is the right type of investor for a destination. Some investors have different agenda, different objectives. So for Nigeria now, and from where we are in our development trajectory, how do you think we can incentivize the right type of investor?
I think first off, I think tax holiday well, you know, because I don't imagine that when you invest, I mean, you are going to buy a property or rent property long term, I would imagine for 10, 15 years. If you are doing that, it's going to take you a while to recoup your money. So I don't think, I think at least 5 years tax holiday well, 10 years is not bad, so that whatever money you are generating, and in exchange for that, you can get investors to commit to certain level of training of manpower, certain level of investment as well. You can say, I'll give tax holiday if you are bringing in, say, 1 billion or 2 billion, you know, just to encourage them to bring more money. And I think that has been done in the oil industry. I know NLNG had 5 years tax holiday. I think they even gave them an additional 5 when the first one expired. And I also think they give, what they call it, pioneer status in the manufacturing industry. And I think the same sort of, benefit should be extended to the hospitality industry. Not the least, the fact that it has the capacity to employ a critical mass of people, you know, is labor intensive, and government needs to keep focusing on industries that are going to take a lot of people off the street, you know, and a low barrier to entry in terms of training. I mean, some people will be cleaning, some people will be doing dry cleaning, some people will be doing every little thing that you have for very skilled workers as well, accountants, you know, lawyers, you know, even medical doctors, you know, and, you know, so, there are some businesses that can employ a lot of people just by the very nature, you know, but I think hospitality business is one of those things, you know, even tour guides can be sort of fused with hotels. So, and so I think it's the right type of industrial sector that, should be given a tax break, and it should also be given, you know, I don't know whether you should call it pioneer status, because the manufacturing companies that are being given a pioneer status, I'm not sure they are that different from hotels, because you can claim to be a pioneer if you are the first hotel or the biggest hotel in Ijebu-Igbo, you know, so to come under that umbrella of pioneer may not be difficult if I say I'm the first 5-star in 1004 estate, or I'm the first 5-star inside National Stadium. So there are ways where you can fit into that category. So I do think tax incentive will really help. And I also think, helping to cut the red tapes, you know, I don't know how, you cannot overemphasize it. And lastly, for me, I think one thing is important, consistency in government policies. You know, consistency. You know, when you talk to foreign investors, one of the things they tell you is, you know what, multiplicity of taxes, this and that. Yes, we have a problem. But the bigger problem is the inconsistencies. You know, they said I can bring in my own furnitures this year. The furnitures that I see, they are coming in January. All of a sudden, they ban the importation of furniture. How do you deal with that? And whether we like it or not, whether we want to run away from it or not, or we think it's not part of it, but for foreign exchange volatility also is a deterrent, you know, because I bring in $2 million when it was 415, which means I'm bringing in 830 million, hypothetically. You know, that's $2 million when I brought it in. As of today, as I'm talking to you, that $2 million between 19th of September and now is about $1 million, maybe $1,050,000, you know. So I've already lost almost 100%. Would I make up to 100% profit in a year? So that volatility needs to be sorted out. I'm not a financial expert, so I'm not going to pretend like I know what the solution is. But any volatility that is more than 10-15% every year is difficult to price. And what businessmen need is predictability and calculability. You know, like, you know what? If I bring in $1 million, at 415, even if Naira is going to depreciate, it depreciates to 450. You know, I can price that. You know, I can predict that. How do you predict, 770 between September 19th, 2022 and now? It's insane. It wipes you out.
And honestly, that is a challenge we're facing now, because it also affects even the operations when people have to import food supplies, and then, or even when you also have existing debts, right? So you have existing debts, that is mezzanine debts or financing that you have done internationally, and then you're making Naira, and then you have to convert it back. You just can't It's really painful. But I would say that, I mean, that's outside of this conversation, but I would say that it's also a way or an opportunity for us to really start to think about, you know, more sustainable sources of materials, more ways that we can do things, more local ways. But one thing, it definitely does not do it. It doesn't signify confidence for foreign direct investment, because you don't want to bring money in and know that you can only make half of it when you're taking it out. And I also have an issue with us, you know, the naira shouldn't depreciate, right? The currency should be stable. And it's this thing of this challenge of so many other elements of our economy that we have to think about, you know, our policies, fiscal policy, that we just have to think about, that we're not going into. But that's beyond this conversation. I think this is another conversation. I want to come to lawyers now. So we've spoken about legal framework, we've spoken about the role of the government. And I would say that in your article, in the full length of the article, which I'll recommend our audience to read, you mentioned the need for even the role for lawyers as well, that lawyers need to also be skilled and to understand the industry better. Can you share quickly just what you think about lawyers and the role of legal advisors in this change that you so desire?
I think, you know, when they're doing legislative drafting and they're changing laws, you have lawyers there. They're advising government, they're helping them draft it. And sometimes, I mean, you hear about a law being, it goes through first and second reading within the day. It's ridiculous. And some lawyers are there sitting down. Because what it means is not enough consultations have been done. Because the reason why you have, public hearing before you pass a law is so that the people that will be affected by it can come in and say, you know, I'm a hotelier, you know, it's going to affect me. I'll be out of business. So you should bear that in mind before you change the law. So lawyers can advise lawmakers, can advise policymakers, can assist businesses to push for incentives as well. You know, currently as it is, arguably, hotels can get pioneer status. Arguably, you just need to find a way to bring yourself under certain umbrellas. And I think lawyers can help in that instance. And they can help in advising as well. You don't want to be looking for loopholes, but you can guide your client. And some people, I mean, they can go and set up at a free trade zone that has some tax incentives. So there are two ways around, even in the existing laws, you know. So we can use also the instrumentality or the platform of Nigerian Bar Association, you know, and we do have forums and sections on business law. You have some people that specialize in hospitality law practice, and they can act as pressure group to push for one-stop shop, to push for tax incentive, to push for to push against multiple taxation, and also to also bring public interest litigation to push back on these things. I think those are areas where lawyers can really help. They can really help in advising. I also think a lot of work can also be done with people also going out of their way, out of their passion, to go and speak to lawmakers, to go and speak to, because I also feel that we've gotten to a stage, not only in the legal profession, but also in the pressure groups, in the different areas, where too much talks, too much meetings are happening. You understand? And I think we need to start identifying the pressure points and going for it. You understand? I'm saying, you know what? I know Buhari is the president, and I know Gambari is the chief of staff, and I know Gambari used to be at UN. Maybe I need to get the UN ambassador in Nigeria to talk to him. I mean, this is not on. You know, we need action. Like I think President Obasanjo just said once, I said we need to do more tanks. We need to do tanks more than think tanks. You know, personally, I'm a bit tired of too much talks. You know, we need to move. You know, and I think moving means you need to go to where these decisions are being made and get them to do things. And you don't need to wait for laws to be changed before you start assisting. You know, thank you.
And honestly, these are certain things that I would say that a lot of us as advisors, as professionals, we wait, right? And we complain in our own interest groups or in our own councils or associations. But it's that sense of taking a role to also champion a cause, lobbying, or as you call it, having pressure groups, or having a stronger interface, you know, engaging more with the policymakers. Or what do you think?
I think, you know, there are some practical examples. I know, for example, the foreign missions, be it the British, be it the Americans, they always have one powerful person in Nigeria that when they have problems, their companies, they will just go to Oba, for example, and go and meet Obasanjo, who they know can call the president and say, look, what's happening? These people brought in money. You guys can't be doing this. So I think the tourism industry as well need to go and look for some people that have interest in the industry or that are passionate about what is happening, that have, that can assist, you know, and just act as guardians for the industry and say, you know, this is not on, you know. So I think that's possible. I mean, so I was reading an interview where they said that when Cadbury came to Nigeria, the British government just told them to go and meet Mr. Akintola Williams. And when they get to Nigeria, they should go and meet him. Any problem they have, you know. So I think the industry also needs to identify people that can make things happen, that are also public spirited, that just want things to work, you know. And these people, out of respect for themselves, they might not come and disturb you and put their noses into your business. But if the association or the advisors go and meet them and keep briefing them what is happening. I have a very, very old friend I'm close to. I don't want to call him a godfather. He's in his 80s. And the government agency that he retired from, every night he watches their program. You know, he knows everything that is going on in that organization. And I can tell you that if something is going wrong, if you go and meet him, he will make an effort to sort it out, you know, and he won't collect a dime from you because that's not why he's doing it. He's the one that set up the agency. He worked there for about 30 or 40 years. He's just very passionate about it. So we need to start looking at some low-hanging fruit. You know, because the process of changing laws can take a year or two or three. Can you really wait for that before investing? You know, can you keep your money? An investor that wants to bring in $5 million, if he has to wait for a year or two, you take the money elsewhere. Time value of money. He's not going to wait.
And also, even if you wait, how do you guarantee that what you're waiting for is going to happen? So those are challenges. I mean, those are real challenges and real issues that investors have to deal with. And I'd like to thank you because I think that you've given us certain things that will guide how we can move forward. So the first thing is we're not waiting for anybody. It's not enough to just complain about government. You've given us a way to say this is how we can engage government, right? We already have associations that exist. How do we strengthen the interface? I know that within the NESG, we have a committee on a thematic group on hospitality and tourism, and also the Nigerian Bar Association, like you've mentioned. I've gone to speak to them on several occasions to brief them. But again, it's that sense of how do we move from talking to ourselves to then taking all of that to advocating for change, and also having someone who is a champion, someone who is very powerful that can champion the cause. Okay, we're coming to the end of our conversation, and I think that before we just close, it will be important to share a bit more about who you are. I know we said you're managing partner of Probitas Partners, but you also have a hospitality venture, RAP Joint Lagos, which you're the founder of and you're a member of the board. And so that, can I just ask you, yes, you're a lawyer, yes, there are issues around the legal framework, but very quickly, could you just tell us, you know, with all of these issues within the hospitality and tourism industry, you still decided to invest, you still decided to move forward. Why did you decide to do that?
I think, first of all, I have a strong passion for Lagos. I have a strong passion for hip hop. And I have a strong passion for just creating opportunities if I can. And I feel that we're different in Lagos in terms of our energy, you know, and how we do things, you know. So when you see the hip hop that is being listened to in America and the one that is being listened to in Lagos, you know, our one is a bit more soulful, you know. So the passion comes from, I want Lagos to be a tourist destination. And, we largely live a monotonous social life. It's always over and there at the weekend, you know, and some of us are also pressed by work. I won't even say age, out of the club scene, you know, by the time I start working at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, when it's 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, there's no way I'm going to a nightclub at 11 or 12. There's no way it won't happen. So one rap joint Lagos is also doing is bringing the club life into daytime where you can enjoy, you can have the same music experience at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 7 o'clock in the evening without the need to wait till the evening. And I think without sounding, at the risk of sounding immodest, I think what we have around Giant Lagos, you won't find it anywhere in the world as of today, where you have a hip-hop themed bookstore and record store, hip-hop themed listening lounge, hip-hop themed restaurant. I don't know where you will find it. And the dream is to sort of export that to the world the same way it's done with Hard Rock Cafe. We started in London and is in 145 countries in the world. And personally, I'm tired of seeing foreign brands in Nigeria. I think we're good enough to import export brands. You know, I don't see any reason why Swiss Sensation cannot be on the high street in London or in New York. There's nothing wrong in it. So one of the things I want to do is for rap joints to be all over the world. You know, that's part of the dream. And so that's really it. And also, hip-hop economy has a potential for growth in Nigeria. I mean, when you talk about the global music industry, in 2021, they made $25 billion. Hip-hop made about $10 billion out of it. And when I say hip-hop economy, it's not just rapping. You know, you have awards, you have the media part of it, you have the advertisement part of it, you have everything, you know, you have people setting up stages for events, you have sound engineers, you know, and I think there's a room for growth. We can create more employment from hip hop, and we can bring the world to Nigeria. And I also think, lastly, there's a subgenre of hip-hop that we have in Lagos that I'm really proud of. And I'm sorry I talk about Lagos a lot as against Nigeria, because I just think Lagos is the Singapore of Nigeria, of Nigeria. And if we can sort out Lagos, every other person can copy Lagos and we'll be fine with it. There's something called, because hip-hop arguably is a foreign music, even though it's not, it has an origin in West Africa, which a lot of us don't know. But what is most important is that we've also domesticated it, where you have what they are referred to as the Ibile subgenre. You know, you have people rapping in Agbada now. And you have people rapping in Yoruba. You have Fino rapping in Igbo language, you know, which is quite refreshing. And I think with the large number of diaspora that we have, you know, that's a big market. Internationally. And ironically, I was, yesterday was the 18th anniversary of Nancy's album, Street Disciples. And it never struck me that he was wearing Agbada and Fima. It just struck me. You know, so we have so much. We have a cultural hegemony over the black world. A black American, a black British, they look to Nigeria for cultural direction. But we're not owning the economy that surrounds it. We're not owning it. You know, so that was the background. We needed to do something. I would like foreigners coming to Nigeria to visit the place, to see how we do things. You know, a lot of people that have come there, like, you know, would like to do that. I mean, one guy came from Sweden, and he said they would like to do the same over there. We've seen some foreigners. I said, you know, I would like people to copy things from us. We can think. We don't need to gobble everything they are doing. We can think. Thank you.
And so with Rap Joint Lagos, we are looking forward to other Rap Joint Lagos in other parts of the world and other ways to see how we can, you're going to see how you can harness the potential of the hip-hop economy and you see it as a long-term type of investment, which I guess is what is important here now, is that we need more people to see things from a long-term perspective. And like you've mentioned, it's that sense of the multiplier effect in terms of jobs in the hospitality and tourism industry. We're known as job creators. One in 10 jobs around the world is a hospitality and tourism job.
I think if I may just say, I'm quite impressed by what Artex has done in the art industry, which is more or less bringing the world to Lagos every November for a week. I think it's amazing. You know, I also observed that last week was more or less a lot of book festival. There was Lagos, there was Fringe, there was Arcade, and I would like to see something for hip-hop as well, you know, for like a week. So I would like to work with Red Clay. You know, let's figure this thing out so that people that come for Artex before they go, is that how we do our own hip-hop week before or after, you know, and that's how our taxi men, our hotels, our tailors, you know. I also noticed that Lagos Fashion Week was also around the same period.
Yes. No, October, November is known as festival season, and actually even early December, just because of the sense of back-to-back. Although, I mean, this is a different conversation. Some of us are saying that perhaps instead of that concentration where you cannot also then get everyone you need, perhaps we should also look at other times in the year so that it creates its own attraction itself. But more to discuss, so much to discuss and so much to do. And I guess this is what's exciting about the tourism industry, right? It's like there's so much opportunity. There's so much that we can do. Right. So thank you so much for your time, Wale. And I have learned quite a bit. Like I said, I encourage people to read the article where you also list several of the actual policies and laws. And I know that Probitas Partner is available to advise if people do need legal advisory, if they're looking at hospitality and tourism investment, or if they already have existing investments and they're seeing how they can either look into the secondary market to sell some of the assets or look to add more to their portfolio. So thank you so much, Wale, for your time and for sharing with us.
Thank you very much, Adun, and thank you very much for all you are doing in the tourism industry. And we'll be looking at you to work with you as partners, not just from Probitas Partners, but also from Rap Joint Lagos. I think we really, really need you. I'm very, very grateful for all the support I've received from you and your team so far. Thank you.